Hey, everyone, listen to the podcast. This is a podcast exclusive. This is Ari, and we have something really special for you. George Santos has gotten a lot of press. We haven't done a ton about him on the show, but that changes with this podcast extra. I have a very special guest coming up who wanted to talk about Santos, so we get into that and a whole lot more. It's Stephen A. Smith. Anyone interested in sports knows his sharp, biting, and often exciting, passionate commentary from ESPN, but he also has a new book out, which is why he joined us on The Beat for the first time. But this goes beyond The Beat interview, in case you saw some of that. We have my discussion with him about a ton of issues that range from the role of history and specifically African-American studies and what Ron DeSantis is doing in that area to what I mentioned, George Santos, to his unique approach to work and sports, to how his own father sort of counted him out when he was growing up, something that he describes in detail in the book. So what this podcast extra does for you guys is share a bunch more than what aired on TV and his section of a conversation I had as well with our colleague Mike Barnacle, someone who also traverses sports, culture, and politics. So that's all coming up here. As a reminder, you can always connect with me at arimelber.com. That's arimelber.com. As I've told you guys, that's one of the best ways that I hear directly from you. It's not going through some social media company or some outside third party. You can just go on there, subscribe to my newsletter. You can pick the free option, and you can comment there, and I'll see your comments. I respond to them. For those of you who already use the newsletter, you probably know that. So you can visit me at arimelber.com or just keep listening for the podcast. And thanks, as always, for spending time with us here on The Beat with Ari Melber. Welcome back. We know our politics are polarized right now. You can find yourself in political debates at a dinner party or work or even in a sports stadium. That's famously led some people to demand athletes leave politics at the edge of the field, a claim that's meant to sound neutral when it actually involves censoring many efforts to back reform. You may recall one conservative anchor infamously condescending to athletes exercising their free speech rights by saying they should, quote, shut up and dribble. A hypocritical demand from someone who talks politics for a living. It also shows how powerful political protests can be on the field, from kneeling to protest police brutality in America, which, by the way, is a peaceful and quiet act that still roiled many conservatives, to more sophisticated multi-pronged efforts by leaders like LeBron James leveraging sports and economic and political capital to pursue his ideas along with others about change. Do those efforts matter beyond sports? Well, here's one way to answer. Ask Barack Obama. The former president found them important enough to confer with James about how to balance that economic pressure campaign and boycotts with a sustainable model for police reform, just to pick one example. So all this matters. And this is about sports and justice and the passion in America which can unite the two. So, you know, we need a guest who can tackle all of that. And we have him here right now making his Beat debut tonight. The iconic, unique, ardent, spirited, and sometimes ineffable anchor of First Take on ESPN, Stephen A. Smith.
Pleasure to meet you, man. How you doing?
Pleasure to have you here for the first time. How are you doing?
It's good to be here. It's good to be here. I like it. I like
it. You like it? You feel it?
It looks pretty smooth.
You know your way around a TV studio. Let me show him the book again, which is Straight Shooter, doing well on the list. It's out now. Go pick it up. Straight Shooter, a memoir of second chances and first takes. Let's start with that point.
Yeah.
The revival of the activist athlete in America. Why do you think people actually do care and the discourse can be shaped by some of our athletes?
Because it's necessary, and the athletes are not blind. They come from communities that are disenfranchised. They recognize those who are voiceless, who lean on them and depend on them to give a voice to those whose voice don't resonate quite as profoundly. And as a result, there's a level of sensitivity and attachment that comes to those communities that is inescapable. It's inbred, they're born with it, and it's never going away. And so when you take those things into account and then you see the level of divisiveness that exists within our country, you see elected officials who are supposed to represent the people but spend far too much time representing themselves and their own personal interests as opposed to the people. When you have all of those things going on, the athletes not only deem it necessary based out of cynicism or skepticism, they not only deem it necessary based out of a compassion and a passion for their own communities, they deem it necessary to get involved because they feel that the people on Capitol Hill are corrupt and don't really represent the American people the way that they should be. So the athletes are going to use their platforms. They have a voice, and they recognize the fact that when they speak, there are millions upon millions of people who are going to listen. Their followers far exceed subscribers or viewers on television and what have you. They know this, and they take advantage of it, and I don't blame them one bit for it.
Do you think that the reaction in some parts of America to specifically often black athletes voicing these issues reflects kind of this contradictory attitude towards black Americans and black entertainment?
I don't know if contradictory is what it is. I think that we all recognize that there are a lot of people from all communities that are highly intelligent. They know what's going on. They exercise common sense. It's just that on far too many occasions, I mean, look at the politics. You cover this. This is what you do for a living. So you know what I'm talking about. Literally, if you're a politician, once the campaign is over, I keep repeating this to everybody. Do you realize they don't have to work anymore? Because all you have to do is go on Capitol Hill, and if you are a Republican, you pull that lever on behalf of the R. You pull that lever on behalf of the D next to your name. That's all you have to do. And you don't have to worry about anything else. You know, as a black man, I can't even tell you, and I'm not speaking on behalf of every black person, but there were a whole lot, I would dare say a vast majority of African Americans, of black people in this country that was absolutely positively petrified that Herschel Walker was going to win the Senate seat in Georgia over Senator Raphael Warnock. We were scared to death.
Do you think he was qualified for the Senate?
I'm getting ready to get to that point. The answer would be hell no. There's no way. I'll go a step further that when Dave Chappelle joked on Saturday Night Live that he was observably stupid. The fact of the matter is most black folks weren't laughing. We were nodding our head. Yeah, that's how we feel. Okay, whether we know it definitively or not based on the things that he said. I mean, after all, my God, the man once sat up there at a press conference and literally as a black man said that the word coon, a black person being called the word coon was a compliment. This is what he said. I have the tape. So trust you me, a lot of us were not happy at the thought that he could have a seat in the Senate. But we also understand.
Now, can I press you on that?
Excuse me?
Can I press you on that?
Please.
At the same time, was it a type of progress that Georgia, this deep South state, actually seemed to have?
Absolutely not.
Go ahead.
I won't even let you finish that sentence. Absolutely not.
You know when they say, I'm going to let you finish?
No,
you didn't.
No.
Go ahead.
Well, the reason why I'm saying that is because, look, if you're a Republican, what you care about is that he's going to vote in support of those policies. So it's not like he was the most qualified. I mean, my goodness, you had Mitch McConnell and others on Capitol Hill questioning the level of competency that he had. But you knew that if he ended up in that seat, he was going to vote with the Republicans.
So
and usually, that's what you care about. Look at George Santos.
So to get you on that, you would say if it was a more qualified individual, even with different ideologies, that would be progress to have diversity from both parties, but not
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely.
All right, now
let me
show you some of the reaction to something that you talk about division that you'd want to be well received, which is the government. I don't care who's running it. The government gets a political prisoner and an athlete back.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get reaction, at least on part of the right, like this.
Biden said he did this because he was under a tremendous amount of pressure from black women. Really?
A convicted Russian arms dealer, a.k.a. Merchant of Death, in exchange for an America-hating lesbian pothead.
Look, we're all glad that Brittany Griner is home and home safely, but she kneeled for the national anthem in the past.
There's the matter of identity, which is central to equity. Brittany Griner is not white, and she's a lesbian.
Out of line?
Some of it was, in my opinion, but not all of it. Here's the deal. If you're an American citizen, you have the right to have the opinion. The person that was released from prison on behalf of this superstar athlete is somebody with the nickname Merchant of Death who tried to kill American citizens. So if you're questioning the equality of the swap, I think that's within bounds. Now, if it were me in Biden's seat, I'm going to get Brittany Griner. There's no doubt about it. She's an American citizen. She's represented America regardless of her refusal to kneel. The fact of the matter is that she's represented this country in Olympic competition. She didn't violate our laws. We knew that it was politicized, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to get her. But here's the major reason I'm going to get her. You have to understand, they tried to get others. Yep. Russia, you know this. Russia was like, no, her, you can have. You can't have anybody else. So it's
her or nothing.
It's her or nothing. So if it's her or nothing, I'm going to get her. Now, obviously, I would have preferred not to release the Merchant of Death. But nevertheless, I definitely want to bring her home. And I'm certainly not going to throw shade on the fact that the President of the United States and his administration got one of our great American citizens back. Regardless of what you may feel about her political positions in the past, I'm quite sure particularly at this moment in time, she appreciates being an American citizen more than she ever has in her life. And I think that we need to look at it in that regard and move forward with that level of thinking.
Facts.
Yes.
So let me turn to a fact that sounds like a compliment of you.
Okay.
But I'm going somewhere, okay?
Okay.
Come with me.
All right.
To listen to you for the first time, even if folks don't watch ESPN, okay, is to hear someone who is obviously very intelligent, very informed, and so adept with every point and every word. And yet, in your book, you write that you were forced, in a sense, or instructed to repeat fourth grade.
I got left back.
Yes. Overheard your parents through a kitchen window. Your dad's voice was matter of fact. Give it up, Janet. The boy just ain't smart.
Right.
He's not going anywhere. Accept it. And you took that as a responsibility to change his thinking.
Yes.
First question, how did that feel when you heard that?
It was devastating. When you're a boy in fourth grade and your own father doesn't believe in you, and that's something that he verbalized to your mother in a fashion that was encouraging her to give up on me before my life even started, it definitely was devastating. But there were things that I was able to peel from it that ultimately inspired me and propelled me to where I am today. Number one, I had the greatest mother in the world who refused to give up on me. God rest her soul. She passed away in 2017. She was always my biggest cheerleader. She was always the greatest woman I've ever known in my life. And so you had that. I had that at my disposal. Number two, I had her inspiring me never to give up on myself. And number three, because he doubted me, it incentivized me to prove him wrong. And that mentality that I had towards him is something that I carried with me throughout my life, moving forward, high school, college, the professional ranks. It doesn't matter what challenge you put in front of my face. The number one thing you could do to inspire me was to doubt me because I was going to be incentivized to prove you wrong, because it was something that I was accustomed to doing throughout my entire life and doing so successfully. And I certainly wasn't going to fail in the future.
I love that.
When I was younger.
There's a saying, I use their hate as my esteem to power my dream.
I like that.
Before I let you go.
Yeah.
We're going to flip it.
Sure.
Because you do your thing. You're so good at your thing. We're going to flip it.
Okay.
And look at presidents playing sports.
Okay.
And get you on that.
All right.
Let's take a look.
24. Oh! Whoa, 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 whoa. Walk off. That's what I do. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Break them down.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the J from Barack Obama was pretty sweet. I mean, to shoot it from the left, from the right side, he's a lefty, and to net it like that, like he said, that's what he does. He's got that style, that kind of style, that kind of swag. I got to give President Obama some love, but I also got to give George W. Bush some love. For it to be, I actually got to put him first, and here's why.
You put him above Obama.
In this regard.
Making news
Obama
tonight.
Was just leaving, and just somebody handed him a basketball, and he drained it. When George W. Bush went on the mound and threw that strike right down the middle.
Yeah.
It was right after 9/11. It was a lot of pressure. He had to go out there And he had to make sure he did it right, with thousands watching in attendance, tens of thousands watching in attendance, and millions watching across the country, if not across the world. That man walked on the mound. And I would dare say, one could easily argue, considering his presidency in some people's eyes, that was his finest moment. I mean, think about
it. I see what you did
there. That was his finest moment. I mean, think about it. There has never been universal praise for him.
I see what
people had good one way or another about him, depending on which side you were. But that night, when he walked on that mound at Yankee Stadium in a playoff game and threw it right down the middle, let me tell you something. A lot of people looked. There wasn't a single person in this country rooting against George W. Bush at that moment, and he showed up.
And you showed up. There it is. Stephen A. Smith, thank you. We're joined now by two absolute juggernauts in the world of sports, journalism, and culture, beginning with Stephen A. Smith, the radio host and commentator known for so many smart and hot takes on First Take at ESPN, plus SportsCenter and NBA Countdown.
Yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, coming at you.
This happens! If this happens, Max, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
Shut up! Did you really think you were going to escape me today?
You know what? You make me sick sometimes. You make me sick sometimes. Please, please, just be quiet and listen. Because let me tell you something, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
That is blasphemous. That is blasphemous. Y'all wasn't even born. Y'all weren't even born the last time the New York Knicks won a title. Ha! Ah! Good riddance. So what? Who cares? Let me go ahead and drink my lattes of vanilla latte.
Drink your latte while you check out his new memoir, Straight Shooter, out in bookstores now. And we're also joined by a good friend of the beat, an MSNBC pioneer, Mike Barnicle, a senior contributor on Morning Joe, a Pulitzer Prize winner for his Boston Globe reporting, covering racial tensions in the 1970s era. He's written over 4,000 columns in his career and also published bylines at the Daily Beast, Time, the Daily News, and so much more. Two icons. Thanks for being here together.
Good to see you, man. How you doing?
Happy to be here, man.
How you doing, buddy?
We love it.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Yeah, you guys know each other. Yeah. Steven, what's on your fallback list?
First order of business would be Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, wanting to prohibit African-American studies in school. He needs to fall back on that. As a black man, the reality of the situation is that we need to know as much about our history as we possibly can. And as far as I'm concerned, the government and everybody in between and under its umbrella should assist black folks to learn as much about our history as we possibly can. And if indeed the decision was made to do otherwise, it certainly shouldn't be done by someone who happens to be white. Somebody black should be making that call. Hmm. Black people, black folks within the Florida community should be making that call, not the governor of Florida. There are certain things that you got to know when to fall back on, no matter what kind of power you have. This is one of those situations.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, the only plus that he has in my book, Ron DeSantis, is that he was a very good baseball player at Yale. He led the team in batting average his senior year. He was pretty good. I don't know what happened to him. He slipped badly since then.
Do you think that his baseball error rate, so to speak, has improved?
I don't know about all that. What I would tell you is that I know that he won his gubernatorial reelection by a landslide. He blew away Crist, and we understand that. But in the end, and there's a lot of Floridians that are clearly like him and prefer him. I'm not here to debate his policies. A lot of them I may not like. Others I may not have a problem with at all. But when it comes to this particular subject that I brought up, you have to, it's very insulting as a black man to see an individual in power who happens to be white making such a decision about what African Americans should be learning and what other people should be learning about African American history, which to him should be slim to nothing. Yeah. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I think Stephen makes many fair points there, including, Mike, the whole issue of why we have people in government trying to censor or stop learning history, understanding the world we're in and how it got this way.
That would be second to my mind in terms of priorities. He's right. I think his first priority is absolutely right. How can a white guy, any white guy, the governor of Florida, any white guy, start lecturing black people on what they ought to know in terms of their lives in the world, and certainly in the United States of America, over a course of 200, 300 years?
Yeah.
No, that's not our job.
So we started heavy and serious, but we can move any direction because that's what we do with fallback. That's why we got the lighters, Mike.
Can I have another one?
Please. Give one to Steven if he wants. He's good.
I let him handle it.
He's good. Yeah, and there's no pressure.
Nothing.
What's on your fallback list?
Well, we can go heavy or we can go light. I might go heavy now because of Ron DeSantis. In terms of, it's now almost the end of January, and we have nearly 40 mass shootings already this month in this country, where we specialize in mass shootings. And we have a series of politicians on the air at all times, largely Democrats and on MSNBC. Unfortunately, Republicans are hesitant to come on some shows on MSNBC. And they all say the same thing, and it's common sense. We need to strengthen the existing gun laws that we have. The problem is they've been saying it for so long, and very little happens. My preference would be to start naming names. Name them and shame them. The people in the Senate and the House, largely on the Republican side of the ledger, I'm sorry to say, who refuse to vote for strengthening gun registration laws, and strengthening gun laws specifically. Name them and shame them. And you can go right down the list. You can go to governors. You go to people like Ron DeSantis. You go to state legislators. But name them and shame them. Make it more public. And have the media pick it up. Name them and shame them in the media.
Yeah. It's a strong one, and it's one of these things where when we report it, it's like, oh, this is how it is. It almost has that weird acceptance when you can go and look comparatively at other countries with similar sets of problems, but they don't have this level of killing. What else? Would you go ahead?
I want to respond to that.
Sure.
Because I think he's right, but I would omit the word shame. And the only reason I say omit the word is that, you know what? We don't have to scare them. Here's the reality of the situation. You're an elected official. You shouldn't be allowed to hide. It's not about shaming you. You're supposed to be front and center letting us know where you stand on issues. You're supposed to let us know why. If somebody's funneling money to you, we're supposed to know that, too. You're in office because the American people put you there. And so for me, about naming and shaming, yeah, I get where you're coming from. I'm just saying I can take out the word shame. Name names. Who are you? What do you stand for? Why do you stand on the platform that you stand on? We have a right to know because you volunteered to be an elected official. Nobody grabbed you and forced you to represent the American people or your constituency and your locale. Nobody forced you to do that. You volunteered to do that. Let's make sure that the rules or regulations are illuminated to such a degree and so conspicuous that nobody gets to circumvent their way around it. Hmm. That's the society we should be living in. Unfortunately, we got too many barriers upon which people can hide behind.
Okay, I have a replacement for shame.
Sure.
How about we call them, the people who vote against these things, accessories before and after the fact of manslaughter or murder?
How about accessories, period, and leave it open for somebody else's interpretation?
I feel like you guys are jamming. I like it.
Good.
Yeah, that's what we do.
That's what we do.
That's what you do.
That's what we do.
What else is on your fallback list?
George Santos, the congressional figure from the 3rd District of New York. He is an atrocity. By all reports, Peggy Noonan wrote an outstanding column about him in the Wall Street Journal last weekend. I counted a minimum of 11 lies that we know of. 11. This man did something Donald Trump hasn't even done. He's lied about his name. He's had 4 different names. Okay, he was campaigning under a different name than he was in the past.
Speaking of naming names,
he's lied about his name. He's lied about his mama. From the standpoint of saying that she was had an office in a building in 9/11 when in fact she was in Brazil. He's lied about just job descriptions that he's had, job titles that he's had in the past. He's lied. The list just goes on. He's lied about his location. I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head, but I know there are at least 11 on the record. Somebody like that clearly lied to the constituency of the 3rd District of New York. He misrepresented himself. As a result, they have no representation. He needs to go, and he's not the only one we need to fall back on. We need to fall back on anybody in the Republican Party who is supportive of him staying on board. It's a disgrace. You got 5 more seats than the Dems. It would be reduced to 4. Get the hell over it. Get him up out of there and have respectful people in there that at least have the decency, if you're going to lie, could you be good with it? I mean, my Lord, 11 lies, caught on 11 lies already. He even lied. I remember he was supposedly married to a woman and lied and proposed to a gay man. I mean, that's lying about your sexuality, for crying out loud. What hasn't he lied about? Somebody like that has got to go.
Listen, I don't disagree. I'm a bit hesitant to go after him that harshly because he is a recipient of the Medal of Honor. Oh, wait. Actually, he lied about that,
too.
Yeah.
He lied about that, too.
Does it tell you anything about the era we're in now, Mike?
It absolutely does. You can get away with almost anything if you continue to, you know, just keep saying it, keep saying it, and keep saying it. You can get away with almost anything. The other thing it says is the psychology of this guy. He's clearly filled with self-loathing. I've been told this by professionals. If you watch his behavior, if you listen to all of the lies, he hates who he is. So he's going to continually come up with a new person. And he does it multiple times.
Well, I completely understand why he hates what he is and who he is. Because we, as American citizens, should hate folks like that. And I'm not here. See, the thing about it, we're having this conversation and we brought up political issues. I'm not really here for that. I can tell you right now, to me, it's not a political issue. And that's what I get mad at people about when they think, it's politics, politics. No, we're not talking politics.
Right.
We're talking about a core decency that you're supposed to have as a human being when you're supposed to be representing people other than yourself. You're supposed to be bigger than that. And I come from a sports world, covering a sports world, where I see guys in their 20s held accountable as if they're the ones who are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, are elected officials representing constituencies, you know, raising taxes and dealing with our health insurance, education reform, welfare reform, our borders, et cetera, et cetera. All of these issues are going on. And the people who have direct impact on the lives of 350 plus American citizens are held less accountable than young men playing sports. Mm. That is a problem in our society that really, really needs to be called to the carpet. Because I will come to the defense of the sports world to the end because of that. That is ridiculous.
You know what we call that, Mike?
What?
Big facts. We call that big facts. So, in conclusion, how long have you guys known each other?
Oh, 16, 17 years.
Yeah, that's a good run. Final question. Something about the other person that either hasn't changed or has. Depending on the truth.
Well, he's always been a straight shooter, an outstanding, exceptional reporter. When he goes on the air, you know exactly where he stands. And when you're in his presence, you know you had better respect him. Mm.
You know, the most impressive thing about Stephen A. Smith is he has always been underestimated and sometimes disrespected. And now here he is, Stephen A. Smith, an iconic figure in American culture, as well as American media, and he's done it on his own. There haven't been anybody, you know, propping him up or saying, get back in there. He's done it on his own, and it's proof of the strength of the human spirit and human character, and he's got both.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
I love that, and when we spoke about your book, you look at how he got there, and it wasn't always easy. So I think that's a fitting place for us to end the fallbacks on. I appreciate both of you.
A couple more lighters.
You know what? Take a few more.
Take a few more.
Mike and Steven.